Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, May 5th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on the scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Luke. We'll be reading Luke 4, read by Alexander Scorby. The Gospel of Luke, chapter 4.
Chapter 4. And Jesus, being full of the Holy Ghost, returned from Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being 40 days tempted of the devil. And in those days he did eat nothing, and when they were ended, he afterward hungered. And the devil said unto him, If thou be the Son of God, command this stone that it be made bread. And Jesus answered him, saying, It is written that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of God. And the devil, taking him up into an high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will I give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. And Jesus answered and said unto him, Get thee behind me, Satan. For it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. And he brought him to Jerusalem, and set him on a pinnacle of the temple, and said unto him, If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down from hence. For it is written, He shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. And Jesus answering said unto him, It is said, Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. And when the devil had ended all the temptation, he departed from him for a season. And Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit into Galilee. And there went out a fame of him through all the region round about, and he taught in their synagogues, being glorified of all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and stood up for to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Esaias. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And he closed the book, and he gave it again to the minister, and sat down. And the eyes of all them that were in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began to say unto them, This day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears. And all bare him witness, and wondered at the gracious words which proceeded out of his mouth. And they said, Is not this Joseph's son? And he said unto them, Ye will surely say unto me this proverb, Physician, heal thyself. Whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy country. And he said, Verily I say unto you, No prophet is accepted in his own country. But I tell you of a truth, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elias, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when great famine was throughout all the land. But unto none of them was Elias sent, save unto Sarepta, a city of Sidon, unto a woman that was a widow. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Eliseus the prophet, and none of them was cleansed, saving Naaman the Syrian. And all they in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath, and rose up and thrust him out of the city, and led him unto the brow of the hill whereon their city was built, that they might cast him down headlong. But he, passing through the midst of them, went his way, and came down to Capernaum, a city of Galilee, and taught them on the Sabbath days. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for his word was with power. And in the synagogue there was a man which had a spirit of an unclean devil, and cried out with a loud voice, saying, Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God. And Jesus rebuked him, saying, Hold thy peace, and come out of him. And when the devil had thrown him in the midst, he came out of him, and hurt him not. And they were all amazed, and spake among themselves, saying, What a word is this! For with authority and power he commandeth the unclean spirits, and they come out. And the fame of him went out into every place of the country round about. And he arose out of the synagogue, and entered into Simon's house. And Simon's wife's mother was taken with a great fever, and they besought him for her. And he stood over her, and rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she arose and ministered unto them. Now when the sun was setting, all they that had any sick with divers diseases brought them unto him, and he laid his hands on every one of them, and healed them. And devils also came out of many, crying out and saying, Thou art Christ, the Son of God. And he, rebuking them, suffered them not to speak, for they knew that he was Christ. And when it was day, he departed and went into a desert place. And the people sought him and came unto him and stayed him, that he should not depart from them. And he said unto them, I must preach the kingdom of God to other cities also, for therefore am I sent. And he preached in the synagogues of Galilee.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
We have a number of questions, John. There's no announcements. The
okay.
First question is on one of the April calls, John mentioned a certified U.S. common law grand jury. How may one communicate with the clerk or jury foreman of this jury?
Okay, I don't recall using the word certified, but the grand jury that we put together was ultimately for the sole purpose of dealing with enemies, particularly domestic, and our focus is to bring back courts of justice. And so that's what we've been really focused in on. Although we did do a number of cases, or at least brought cases together and, you know, helped people send information. And we also sent papers, you know, into the courts dealing with particularly people who lost their homes and habeas corpuses. We did do a few others that we probably didn't plan on doing, but, you know, some traffic and a few other things, I believe. But our sole focus was really to build a case to show... particularly with habeas corpuses and the closures, the foreclosures, that they do the same thing in each, you know, in each state, and how they responded in the federal courts, because we moved these things into the federal courts, and that was our focus. The target was the federal court, in order to show that the federal courts not only would ignore the cases. I mean, we didn't realize at first how they would really deal with this, but they did ignore all the cases. They denied habeas corpuses, and we've got, I don't even know how many cases, a lot of cases. They are pretty much listed, and you can find most of them right here in the federal court cases. But again, the key thing was to prove a conspiracy at some point, because no matter how they broke the law, they did the same thing, whether it was in California, Texas, New York, New Jersey. It didn't matter where they were at. They all did the same thing, and they all ignored habeas corpuses. So that was the case we were building. And we did do presentments to the United States Supreme Court. And we did a presentment to Trump and also Bondi, Attorney General Bondi. And we did an indictment on the federal judiciary, and we're about to... do another paper, which we'll probably talk a little bit about tonight. So we're not taking on cases per se, and we've asked all of the grand juries that have collected themselves in every state, because we did establish grand juries in every state, and they established themselves as a unified state common law grand jury, whatever state they were from. And we did get this accomplished in all 50 states. And then we all came together, and established the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. The purpose of that really was to get you all to get people working together throughout the entire nation. They can't say that we're just a small group of people in some corner of the state, particularly here in New York. But we have worked diligently over the many years we've been doing this in order to establish that position. And so we're at a point now, I think, we're going to be doing a First Amendment case, redress of grievances from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, filing in the United States Supreme Court. And again, our purpose is to bring back courts of justice and the federal judiciary. I'd like to see every single judge removed from power in throughout the entire federal judiciary. I do believe that's possible. Difficult, though, of course, but I think it's also necessary. And I think this case is really going to prove it because they've all broken the law. And we're going to prove that case, I believe. Well, we've already pretty much proven it anyway in the papers that we sent as far as indicting the entire federal judiciary. And the key thing is taking back the federal courts, because if we take back the federal courts, it's only a matter of time. As a matter of fact, it's slam dunk across the nation. We probably will try to get people together to work with us on this in every state to move forward and bring back courts of justice in our state courts, where really most of the trial courts are, you know, really pretty much for the people here in whatever state it is that you're in. So we don't take on cases particularly, and we're not taking any cases at this point in time, because then we're at the end of our play here at this point. Anything else, Jim?
Yes, about three or four more. The next one is, I think somebody's got a mic. John, why are you not using David Hosea's lawful strategies? You guys get very few wins, and Jose is getting wins right and left. Live, restarting the People's Massive Stand, Operation Lift. It gives a Rumble website. Are you familiar with Operation Lift or the People's Massive Stand?
Okay, I did see that email, and I did go and look at that video. I did not watch the whole video. I just don't have time. Unless it really was to capture me with learning something, I would have watched it. But I skipped through it, you know, and maybe spent maybe 10 minutes skipping through different areas trying to hear. I didn't see or hear anything that would be, you know, helpful to me, but that doesn't mean that what he's doing isn't helpful. I question wins, though. I've heard a lot of people claiming wins, and I've never really seen it. But who knows? Maybe he does have some wins. We're going up against the federal judiciary, particularly focusing in on, again, people losing their homes and habeas corpuses. And the fact that they did, we didn't win, well, we actually won a couple. We had a couple of them, I think, on the habeas corpus end. Particularly, you know, they just shut the case down. but I think there was only two that I'm aware of. But other than that, they pretty much did the same thing and ignored the cases. And that may not have been so much of a win on the federal level as it might have been on the state level, where the individual might have had some, a win for himself. But we did have one federal case, and the judge did throw the case out, and it did happen after we filed our papers. So maybe we kind of think that we might have had a win there. I'm very leery about people who are claiming a lot of wins. People can get a win from time to time. It's extremely difficult. So if someone has information on this and wants to lay it out, they can do that. You can send we need the details, and I don't know what his strategy is. Our strategy is straightforward. We're just going back to the Constitution and the common law. That's our strategy, and that's our position, and that's what we're going to win the cases on eventually. And I do believe we're going to be successful in this, hopefully sooner than later. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, we have been asking for assistance. We haven't been getting too much of an assistance as far as money is concerned. But we'll do what we have to do eventually and get the job done. Okay, next question.
We are applying for a business line of credit, and we just wonder what is the best name to put on the business credit card. We will be transferring the business under the common law trust, but have a few questions being a sole proprietor. First question, is it good to apply for a business line of credit, or what is your from any experience you have had with those line of credit?
Well, I don't think that, go ahead.
There's two more parts to it. Do you want to do each one individually?
Yeah, we'll do this one first. Yeah, I don't have any experience in the credit side of things, so I can't really help with that. But you got to be careful with a trust, okay? Remember, there's got to be a beneficiary, and there's got to be the individual who actually put things up to put into the trust on behalf of the beneficiary. So there's at least three people involved, and then one other individual is a trustee. Usually you'd like to get two trustees, so, you know, there would be four individuals involved. I don't know how you would do it under a business. It depends on what kind of business you're running and what it is you're looking to do. I'll give you an example of something that we've done in the past. Another contractor I assisted with had done in the past, and where they had lots of equipment, site contractor, had lots of equipment. And what we did was we moved all the equipment into another corporation, and that corporation would then rent the equipment out to the contractor who was doing the business. And this way, if he was sued, he'd be at minimum risk as far as losing his equipment and being able to continue his work. So that kind of thing could be done. It's a common procedure, I think. But I don't know exactly what you're trying to do with a trust with a business. That might be, I don't know how good it would be. Don't know. Next.
Okay. Should we put the name of our business on the credit card line of credit that we're applying for, or a different name?
Again, I don't have the experience with credit.
Okay. The next one is a little bit longer, and it's about help with drafting a complaint against the federal government. Does anybody have information on the rule of signatures? Apparently, it's supposed to show you how to sign your name so that you can express your political status. Any additional information on this would be greatly appreciated. Also, if anyone knows of individuals that I can hire to help me draft a complaint against the federal government, I would truly appreciate your putting me in contact with the individuals. I found someone by the name of Kenneth Steele out of Rhode Island, but he is requesting I send him cash wrapped in foil via UPS Priority Mail as payment for services. It sounds a little suspect, and I don't have money to get caught up in fraud. If anyone knows this individual and can vouch for his work, that would help. Lord knows it's difficult finding good people to help out when you are being attacked by the federal government.
Well, first of all, filing a complaint puts you under civil law, so I wouldn't use the word complaint. It has to be an action at law. They will respond in different ways, trying to put other words in place that would really change your jurisdiction. That's key. As far as political status is concerned, it shouldn't have anything to do with justice, so I don't know why anybody would seek that. And then there was a third part of that. What was it, the political status, the complaint? Oh, yeah, that person. Yeah, I have no idea who that person is. I'd be a little weary myself, people asking for cash. I know people who spend quite a bit of money and asking help from someone, and they went through different things, and I've seen some of the paperwork. It's a horror story, and really it's not helpful, because if people think that they're going to go into a court of law and make some statements and sign a paper in a certain way and say certain words and click their heels and find themselves transported into a court of justice, it's not going to happen. But I know there are a lot of people selling all kinds of things out there. I don't know what to tell you on that. I'd be very careful. But, you know, again, we can't help particularly because we're focused in on one thing and one thing only, and that is to bring back courts of justice because they've all been closed. We haven't found a court of justice yet. Okay, next.
Okay, John. That was the last question for tonight, and you're done.
Okay, great. All right, let me see if anybody's gotten in the queue. I think I opened the queue. Let me see. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I got a couple of people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? It's a *6 and a 1. And if that's if you're on a phone. If you're on an app or browser, should be a button. I do want to go through, and we read a paper a couple of weeks ago, and the paper that I had read was really a paper. It's really a cover letter that's going to be going to individuals, particularly Trump and his administration. We've got a list of 45 people. I'm waiting for some more books to come before we actually are able to do anything. I'm going to try to file this case without having, you know, to pay for monies. They want $300. They call that a fee. I call that a fraud or blackmail or some other thing. I'm sure there's other words we can use for that. Well, not blackmail. That's probably the bad word. I'm trying to think of a better word for that. Anyway, they're asking for money for justice, and that's what all these courts are doing. It's an abomination. And I think we might be able to do it for a couple of reasons. I think we're going to be able to write a very powerful cover paper that will really kind of make them think a little bit, on the one hand. Not that these people are interested in justice, but in any event. The other thing, ultimately, is we're coming in as the grand jury. And we're not going to do this as a presentment, I don't believe. It's going to be a court case, and we're going to be really resting on the First Amendment, the right of redress of grievances. And the key position we're going after is the way that they've gone through and set our courts up to turn us into civil law courts through the Rules Enabling Act. Which was subversion. It was subversion against the United States of America, against the Constitution, against we the people. And that was done back in, the legislation was done in 1934, so it's called the 1934 Rules Enabling Act. And it was 1938 when the United States Supreme Court claims to have written the rules. I'm sure they didn't write the rules. I'm sure the Bar Association wrote the rules. They were behind this whole thing. They've always been behind this. The Esquires are behind everything, going all the way back to 1750, which is when we were just colonies. And that's pretty much when the Revolution was really starting, was in 1750. Benjamin Franklin was a real problem to the king. And he pretty much was the guy that was pushing us along, and it grew and became what it was, and we became the United States of America. But they've been working ever since then through bar attorneys, which have titles of honor, called Esquire, and they have been really pushing this thing along and destroying this nation. That and political parties, the two biggest things. And the letter I'm going to read tonight had a lot to do with factions or political parties that George Washington spoke about. This was something really pushed and focused on by the bar. I mean, they're the ones that did this. They codified the committee man. That appears to have happened somewhere, at least here in New York, which I think the nation kind of followed along, but that was done in 1909, between 1909 and 1911. 1909, we can find the old law. We did speak about that a couple of weeks ago, and I did mean to go and look up the laws on that, the changeover, at least the original to the changeover. In 1909, the original law was really focused in, very minimum, as a matter of fact, and it was focused in particularly on agencies, ultimately. It didn't focus in on the people. But after that, in 1911, here in New York, goodness, that must have grown 10 times. They've written so many laws on so many different things, and you could see that they were really focusing in on building a civil law at some point in time. So they were really working on that, going all the way back then. But it didn't come to happen until 1938 through the federal government, you know, the federal courts particularly. And then every state, all the way down, all 50 states followed suit. So the enemy is deep, very deep. And we're going to find that out soon once the arrests really start to take place. I mean, there are arrests already taking place. But the big wigs, you know, the real big stuff, and a large number of people, that'll be coming up soon, I'm sure. Okay, anyway, so we're writing this letter. And again, we're up for a conversation on this. I'd like to get a conversation on this letter. Maybe some ideas, if anybody has any corrections that could be offered on this letter. Originally, it was just about 2 pages. Now it's 3 pages. I've made a lot of changes in this, and I may continue to massage it. I mean, I still have time with this letter. I started writing the paper as far as collecting my framework for the paper, but I haven't finished it yet. Maybe I'll finish it by the next Monday, and maybe we'll read what I have at that point, and then we'll sit on it for a week or two, you know. And also, again, I'm waiting for some books to come in. And if we're going to have to pay to get into the courts, you know, we'd like to get some more money. People need to, you know, donate some more money. And if we are successful and we have to go to Washington, then we're going to need more money, you know. If lawyers were to do this, you can rest assured this case wouldn't even start for anything less than probably $50,000. And that would be lining the pockets of lawyers. We're just looking for raw costs. So, and, you know, it is it's a little depressing, I'd like to say. I hate to say, keep this kind of depressing attitude. I know I've had it for 3 weeks. But it's very depressing because there's very few people that have held the National Liberty Alliance up, and I'm very thankful for that. And they're consistent. But there are a lot of people who haven't helped us financially speaking. We're only asking for $5 or more. And it's very difficult. I mean, we asked last week, and since then we've only collected $60 from one person. But we'll see what happens. Maybe people will have a change of heart, realize that they need to do something. You know, you should be doing something to begin with, getting committees of safety going. You should be involved in your local community and working the committees of safety so that we can have government by consent. You cannot have government by consent unless you work it through the committee of safety. There's no other way. If anybody thinks there's another way, I'd love to hear it. But there is no other way. I've done a lot of research on this, seen what our founding fathers did. And the only way you can have power and authority is to be the real, the true committeeman. To be a committeeman is an unalienable right. It's not limited. The statutory committeemen are limited. They're controlled by party bosses and rules. You break the rules, they kick you out. And they set up a facade. And I understand they don't set this facade up in every state. Maybe they do, but I don't think they do. But I know here in New York and many other states, they do set up a facade where it looks like the committeemen are being elected, when the fact of the matter is you're being chosen. Okay, because there's a party boss that really makes the decision. And that's just the way it is. And so we've lost that committeeman process. I was a committeeman, got in a couple of times, and a few other people I know that got in also. Totally corrupt. There's no real vote. Everything is the fix is in. Who's going to be elected? The fix is in. And we're starting to see how serious it's been for a long time, particularly what we see what the Democrats have been doing. And I'm sure there was some cheating on the Republican side, too. You know, I'm kind of thankful that, you know, Trump has come in and captured the hearts and the minds of a lot of people who I guess haven't taken the bribe and they're willing to do the right thing. And we've taken control of the House and the Senate and they are doing the right thing. And if they were guilty of something, you know, I'm sure they would be on the Democrat side making their votes. We do have a couple of Republicans out there voting on the Democrat side. I know one particular is this, you know, one particularly Paul, for instance, I think he's just a little lost in his thinking. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's on the take or anything like that. But he voted the wrong way. He led a fight to try to stop Trump on these tariffs. And these tariffs are a necessity in order to bring the economy back together again. And, he just didn't understand that, I guess, and I'm very surprised. But in any event, now is the time, and I think when I read this letter, you're going to see my point, that now is the time to really push to get rid of political parties. A lot of people think we can't do that. People actually think our government couldn't survive or go forward or do anything without political parties. That's a very, very ignorant position in thinking. It's just that shallow thinking. And that means they've never looked and researched or read anything or learned anything about our founding fathers. Because they would have been appalled by the fact that we've called ourselves a democracy. Okay, so let me, I'm going to go through this paper, and I think it's important to read. And again, this is the first time reading it out loud, and as I read out loud, it's the best time to capture mistakes. And if I capture some mistakes, we'll make correction as we go along. If anybody else sees a mistake that we missed, make a note, and maybe when we finish reading, you can let us know what mistakes that might be. If anybody has any other ideas, or a better way to say what we're trying to say, that'd be fine. We'll listen and consider it. Okay, so this is going to be coming from National Liberty Alliance, and it's going to President Trump, his cabinet, and others. It's a total of 45 individuals. That includes Trump. And it starts off, we have all been taught the lie. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that ain't so. Mark Twain. And that is the problem. You know, we have this problem with our representatives. They keep talking about us being a democracy. That tells me they don't know history. They don't know American history, you know? Also, the fact that everything they do is with lawyers, that's a major problem, too. They don't understand that. Lawyers are taught that we are under Roman law and that our nation was built like Rome was built, politically speaking. And that's not true. And again, we go back into the Bible, ultimately, to discover how our nation was, how our country was put together. But anyway, let me just read through this. Hang on a second.
Am I the only one who can't hear?
No, he just went away. I thought he was taking a phone call or something.
Oh, no. No, I'm sorry. I was muted. Okay.
I'm back.
I was reading through this paper, so let me go back and I guess start all over. Let me see how many people are in the queue. Hang on a second. Okay, we only got a couple of people in the queue, so we'll read through this, and I apologize for that. I guess I just never unmuted myself. Okay, this is going out to President Trump, the cabinet, and others, 45 people altogether. This is the cover letter that's going to be going to all these individuals with the paper that we're going to be filing into the courts. Okay? And we read, we have all been taught the lie. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. Mark Twain. And that's the problem that I found that our representatives have. You know, Trump and all of them, they seem to have this problem. Because they talk about us being a democracy, and they really don't bring up anything on the common law. You know, again, we'll talk more about that kind of a thing at another time. But our founding fathers reviled democracy and gave their posterity a republic. As Thomas Jefferson said, the republican is the only form of government which is not eternally at open or secret war with the rights of mankind. Sound familiar? We the people chose a republican form of government, not a democratic republican form of government. The phrase democrat republican is an oxymoron. We the people ordained Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state of this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. While trying to discover a form of government, John Adams wrote, democracies never last long. It soon wastes, exhorts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy that did not commit suicide. We stand at that precipice today. In Federalist Number 10, and unfortunately I don't think they really realize this, in Federalist Number 10, Madison wrote, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. In Anti-Federalist Paper Number 10, we read, true Democrats are in general fanatics, and enthusiasts and some few sensible, charming madmen. Sound familiar? Anti-Federalist Number 74, we read, there is not a tincture of democracy in the proposed Constitution. Every free man of America ought to hold up this idea to himself that he has no superior but God and the laws. Just because we elect most of our representatives by popular vote does not make us a democracy. We don't elect the president by popular vote, and we should not be electing our senators at all. The 17th Amendment destroyed the balance of power and is repugnant to the Constitution. See Article 5. The states lost suffrage and thereby lost their sovereignty. And the people lost their representatives to special interest groups and thereby lost their sovereignty. And we lost our common law courts by the Rules Enabling Act, which abrogated our Bill of Rights. Read the attached grand jury filing for redress of grievances to the U.S. Supreme Court, whereas if we do not take back our courts of justice, we will no more be the land of the free. And that, of course, is going to be the focus of the paper going in, the Rules Enabling Act. One method of assault may be to effect in the forms of the Constitution alterations which will impair the system, to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. George Washington's farewell address. All obstructions to the execution of the laws, all combinations and associations, that's political parties, under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities are destructive of this fundamental principle and a fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction, again, that's again the political parties, an exclusive circle of people with a common purpose. and these two parties have a purpose: to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs and of differences party of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction. And the word faction, our founding fathers used that word a lot, and again, that is identifying with parties, groups, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. However, combinations or associations of the above description, Democrat or Republican Party in our case, may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominions. One method of assault may be to effect in the forms of the Constitution alterations which will impair the energy of the system, and thus to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. It is indeed little else than a name where the government is too feeble to withstand the enterprises of factions or parties, to confine each member of the society within the limits prescribed by the laws, and to maintain all in the secure and tranquil enjoyments of the rights of person and property. It opens the door to foreign influences and corruptions, which find a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and the will of another. Again, sound familiar? Our founding fathers were generally uneasy about political parties. For the most part, they believed that parties had potential to tear the new nation apart. To these men, political parties meant factionalism, which they believed could be fatal to the development of the United States as a unified country. It is no surprise, then, that political parties are entirely omitted from the U.S. Constitution. In response to George Washington's concern on parties, the following clause was written into the New York Election Law, Section 21, which stated, "No organization or association of citizens for the election of a city, town, or offices shall be deemed a political party." And that's what they've done. The political parties start down at that level and work their way right up to the national level. And they're elected individuals, so they claim anyway. Again, that whole thing's a facade. Regrettably, the aforesaid clause was covertly removed between 1909 and 1911, and thereby codified party bosses' control over party committeemen through self-serving rules. And today, John Adams' dreadful political evil came to pass, and the two-party system reached maturity, fulfilling George Washington's warnings, and thereby ushered in the beginning of the end of our republic via party bosses in the Republican Party Association and the Democratic Party Association. All of America's woes can be traced back to political parties. George Washington was right. But for some strange, illogical reason, many people believe that a Republican form of government cannot work without a two-party system, whereas our founding fathers didn't think so. And in fact, they said the opposite is true, as President George Washington clearly articulated above. If there were no party-controlled agendas that serve special interest groups, which is nothing short of unlawful bribes for favor, the will of the people would be served. Whereas if there were no party bosses orchestrating personal agenda, they have no business debating then they would actually be free to represent their constituents. Something sounds wrong with this. Let me read this again. People would be served. Okay, whereas if there were no party bosses orchestrating personal agendas, that they have no business debating, then they would act, probably a comma here, I think. Let me see if I can get a comma in there. I think that makes it better. It kind of breaks it away. Then they would actually be free to represent their constituents, which is what they were elected to do. See, they're not representing us. They never have, at least not during our lifetime. They're representing special interest groups. And that's why they got the 17th Amendment, to take the power away from the states and bring the senators back under, you know, being elected by the people. And they, too, serve the same group of people, the special interest groups. So the people's business never get really done properly. Therefore, in order to have a true republic, which is ruled by law, that we, the people, ordained and established, we must nullify political parties and unlawful special interest groups. We, the people, detailed congressional powers under Article 1, Section 8. They have no business debating our unalienable rights or any issue that we, the people, did not vest with them. If we don't reestablish our political and judicial process back to what our founders pledged their lives and their fortune and their sacred honor to secure, America will not survive. Considering the implosion of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, parties rallying around the Constitution, we have a window of opportunity to return to our roots. As Jefferson said when he was elected president, we are all Federalists. We are all Republicans, because that's the factions. They created a faction between people who were focusing on Republic and claiming that they were in opposition to Federalists. But the Republican Party didn't get started until many, many years later. Democrat Party was really the Federalists. They morphed into the Democratic Party. I think it was 1801. Okay, his statement was an attempt to end growing factions and encourage a rallying around the newly adopted Constitution. Labels are divisive. Therefore, if we find it necessary to have a label, it should be, we are all constitutionalists. Let's end political parties and special interest group bribes and resurrect the Constitution. The people want a solution to our problems, whereas our common law founding documents is that solution. We will never have this chance again. All the work that President Trump and his administration are doing is worthless if we don't listen to Jefferson and Washington, because our liberty rests in our common law, without which can be no liberty. It will only be a matter of time when sociopaths and psychopaths regain power again and bring us back to the brink of destruction. The judiciary's dark reasoning for covertly and criminally abolishing common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's laws, written in the hearts of men, built upon self-evident truths, maxims, brought about injustice. This is absurd, considering that God is good, just, and merciful, and they are not. And therefore it follows that his law is just and merciful, while the hearts of men are desperately wicked, who could know it, as we read in Jeremiah 17:7-9. Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is, for he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. The heart is deceitfully above all things, and desperately wicked. Who could know it? The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the judiciary's dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. Their claim that common law rules brought about injustice was an act of deflection, whereas their civil law rules brought about injustice, a silent coup by claiming the abrogation of the common law and its unalienable rights that are endowed by our Creator, and covertly substituted them with civil rights legislated by lawless men. Sociopaths and psychopaths always deflect upon us what they are guilty of. Okay, and then, of course, what's going to be attached to this letter going to all 45 individuals is going to be the copy of the redress of grievances to the United States Supreme Court by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and the book Government by Consent. And as I mentioned a little earlier, I'm waiting for some more books to come, and maybe we should be here in a week or two. But I still have writing to do. I don't think we're going to be able to do this, filing papers and getting everything out for maybe 2 weeks. I'm going to work on trying to get the paper done, or at least the first draft done, and maybe look at it in the next week. Hopefully next week, but if not the next week, the week after. And we'll go through it here on a Monday night program and see once, you know, how what other people think about it, and maybe find corrections and maybe get some other ideas from people and so on. Okay, so with that, I'll eventually upload this onto the website. We'll put it right here on the front page, right underneath here, presentment to President Trump and Attorney General Bondi. But with that letter, it's going to be called a cover letter to Trump and his administration, and it'll also be with a copy of redress of grievances to the United States Supreme Court. Now, I did find a way, I don't know whether I mentioned this before, I might have mentioned this already, but we did find a way to go directly to the Supreme Court without having to go through the trial and through the appellate process. Because they have, the United States Supreme Court has original jurisdiction over this issue. This cannot be decided by the lower courts at all. They don't have the power, they don't have the authority, and really their decisions on the lower level, the trial level, ultimately under administrative, is just, this is what we suggest is the right thing to do. It's not the final decision because it goes through an appellate process. But even through that appellate process, they're not courts of record. They do not have the ability, the jurisdiction to hear this case. As a matter of fact, they will call it moot. It's a moot issue. Can't discuss that. Forget about it. So we have no choice but to go directly to the United States Supreme Court. And any time they have original jurisdiction over an issue, it can go directly to the Supreme Court without going through the trial and the appellate process. So that'll save us a lot of time because to go through that whole process would probably take a year or two. With the United States Supreme Court filing it, I don't know what, you know, I'd have to look a little into how they set the time periods of hearing cases. So like if there's a period of time where they're hearing cases, that's already been established by what cases they're going to be hearing. And then the next time period would be another group of cases that they might hear. But I would imagine filing this, we could probably be heard within 6 months. But again, it could be less, it could be a little more, depending on where they're at and when the next time period is that they're going to be taking on the next group of cases that they're going to hear. I do not believe there is a way that they can ignore this case. Not to say they won't or they can't. But really, it would be very bold on them to ignore this case. And again, that's therein is the reason why we're copying the administration, Attorney General Bondi, and you know, Trump and his full administration, which includes, of course, Bondi, and a few other individuals that are around Trump, particularly some you know, congressmen and some senators. And some family members. Okay, so we're going to go take some questions. Anybody's got any questions? You can get into the queue again if you're on the phone, *6 and 1. And if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button to get in. And again, it'd be good to discuss this issue or the issue coming up at hand, but let's see where we go. Okay, we'll take our first caller. Looks like an individual named David. Maybe you can tell us your state, 404 area code. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yes, good evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, David. What state are you from?
I am from Georgia.
Okay.
State of Georgia. So okay. I did email the question to the question email earlier. What I wanted to know was if anyone could put me in contact with an individual who can help me file a complaint against the U.S. government. Specifically, this is against the Department of State.
Okay, well, look, first of all, by using the word complaint, changes it makes a jurisdiction for civil law, gives them the power, the authority to go forward. we've had an issue with a case that I filed recently where they crossed out some information on a paper and wrote the word complaint, and we objected to that. And we told them that, they, you know, you can't do that. That's against the law. We're going to hold you liable, and we're going to push your feet to the fire and go after you for that. And that was an individual. The clerk was looking at the paperwork, went into the back room, came back with someone else who probably was a lawyer, and they're the person that crossed it out and wrote the word complaint. And after we threatened them with going after them, because he was breaking the law by doing that, he then went and whited it back out and put the paperwork in properly the way we had it. So they understand that. Now, just because we say all the right things and are very careful with maintaining jurisdiction, you know, our real focus is really going into eventually the higher courts and hopefully get, you know, some justice there. But it's maintaining our case. It's an important thing to maintain a case. So you have to start thinking about this a little differently. If you get a lawyer, a lawyer's not going to take this battle on, probably, and if they do, you know, they'll have a conversation in the back room with the judge, and everybody's going to know
that. Yeah. I could tell you, I have called about 200 to 300 lawyers, and no one will take this case when the minute I say it's a civil rights case, constitutional rights case.
Again,
there's no attorney that will touch it.
Hold on, again, this is very careful. By using a civil rights case, and I think you just corrected yourself anyway, by using the word civil rights, you then just gave them the ability to deny your rights. They're going to call the Bill of Rights the civil rights, and that means that maybe we'll let you have that right today, but maybe tomorrow we're not going to let you have that right. So, again, therein is the problem, and believe me, they do not obey the Constitution, and they don't care about your rights. I can tell you firsthand numerous times this has happened. So that's a major problem. It's a difficult case. I would say collect your information, and hopefully it'll be sooner than later. And again, I don't know how long this is going to take. It could take months. It could take 6 months. And again, the only thing that's stopping us from seeing whether they're going to hear it or not is really going into the next session, because this session that's in session right now, they already have the cases, the agendas. They have the cases already locked up that they're going to be covering. So any cases coming in now would go to the next session. And I have to look in. I haven't studied the Supreme Court sessions, when they're in session, when they're out, all that stuff. But I do know that there are thousands of cases that go up to the Supreme Court, and they only hear about 200 to 250 of those cases. So it's very difficult to get before the United States Supreme Court. The point is, though, is that I don't think they have a choice but to hear this case. I really don't think they do. As long as we get the word out, and that's something we are failing to do, and I ask people all the time, look at all these papers we've written. These papers should be out there everywhere. The presentment to the United States Supreme Court, the addendum, we made an addendum to that presentment, the indictment upon the federal judiciary, the presentment to President Trump, and the presentment to President Trump and Attorney General Bondi. We did two presentments. And then this next paper we're going to be doing now. If these papers were out there, if all these people with the blogs and all the different news that we listen to, people on podcasts and different things, if these people were all talking about it, it would be a lot of attention. Of course, we're sending it to 45 individuals who are key individuals in our government that are looking to bring the Constitution back. I'll be getting it before them, all of those people. But we have to get this information out. It's up to the people to do this. I can only do so much. And you know, if everybody really thought about it and tried to get an interview, or at least get these papers out, and people may be interested in interviewing just by reading the papers. But we've got to get this information out. But if you file your case during that period of time, you'll have a better chance. If you do it now,
what I was asking. If anybody, I don't see just the way you pointed out that. There's certain mistakes that I'm making as far as how I represent my my lawsuit by calling it a complaint or telling them something as simple as it's a civil rights violation. You know, I'm trying to avoid that mistake. I'm trying to not make it so that there's a problem. Now, I've been searching for somebody who can help me. I don't mind paying somebody. I don't care if it's in the form of a donation, but I just want to make sure I have my statement of facts, chronological order of events. I've had that for the last 4 months. I just need somebody to help me put it together in a lawsuit so that I could file it in federal court.
Well, look, it's a mindset. If you don't have a proper mindset and some experience with the words that are being used, like understanding what words would really lay into the, give us, make it clear that we're in a particular jurisdiction called a court of record, okay, and that's a common law procedure, in opposed to something in civil law or equity. So with that in mind, but there are some key words that you want to be careful with. You know, you don't represent yourself, you come in your own person, in personam. Or in your own person. Personam means person anyway. But I always write in personam. Okay, so that's one thing. Opening a court of record, being very clear about it, defining it in a footnote, putting it up on the top right side of the paperwork right in the beginning, the jurisdiction, court of record, and define it in a footnote. And again, being very careful with words. There's quite a few words that you just don't want to ever use, because they have more than one meaning. They've given other meanings to words, which is not right or lawful, ultimately, anyway, but they make words mean something else. I hear there's a lot of talk out there about what is legal and what is lawful, okay? And I understand the position that people are making concerning the difference between legal and lawful, but they're in error. They're thinking that it means something else, because both those words mean the very same thing, legally and lawfully. Okay, if you go into Black's Law Dictionary and look them both up, you will find they have the same meaning. Okay, so there is no real difference by using legal versus lawful, but it is something that they do claim or they make feel better that it means something else, because it's legal, it's written down. No, it's null and void, because it's not illegal. It's as lawful and it's unlawful as it was from the day it was written, okay, and passed. If it's repugnant to the Constitution, maybe Marbury versus Madison. But anyway, I don't know of anybody out there that really is very careful with the proper words, but I'm sure there's someone, but I just don't know who.
Well, I'm not talking about words. I'm talking about someone who can help me
write in the papers and everything.
Write the actual lawsuit so that I can file it in federal court.
Again,
I'm
not aware of anyone. We do have a course here. You could take the course, and maybe you could become that person.
I paid for the course. I've been going through it. It's a lot of information to regurgitate.
Right.
I've signed up for the classes for the last 5 months, and I'm just going through a lot of the information, trying to wrap my head around it. I have all the information, but I just think I need someone to kind of guide me, help me put the statements that I have on paper in a lawsuit. And then file it with the federal government to get this moving. Because God knows, I don't think you understand my situation. I'm being attacked by the government. I can't work. They've stopped me from earning a living to provide for my family. They've attacked me. They've attacked. Department of State has denied me a passport. They've attacked my businesses. They've ruined my everything that I've had, housing, everything. My savings, everything. I need to make this go immediately, because I can't wait anymore. I'm living in someone else's home. I'll be out in the streets, shortly here, because I there's nothing else. There's no other recourse that I have.
Well, I hate to depress you further, but it's going to be an uphill battle in the federal courts today. And in the federal courts, it's a matter of them having authority to hear the case. And generally, usually to take a case into the court, usually at least anything I've done or written, for denial of due process. And if you can get them on denial of due process, that everything shuts down. But I don't understand your situation completely. I don't know, have they taken your court to do these things, or they're just doing it? you know.
I mean, if someone, I don't think you understand. If somebody denies you work, I've been working as an engineer for 30 years. And
yeah,
now
but
I can't get a job.
My question is, my question to you is this, though. Is a court of law said they're taking your license or something, or they tried to pull your license, or what?
They did that as well. They suspended the registration on my car and my license.
Yeah, but
pulling me, I was working at the CDC. They pulled me over, had me fired because of the incident. You know, they had the guard at the gate had to report what, you know, the incident that happened, me getting pulled over by, Atlanta, Georgia police, and being arrested.
But you said,
them state,
you said CDC, an acronym. What does that stand for?
I'm sorry? CDC? Center of Disease Control.
Okay. And so let's just get to the simplicity of the case. You did something or said something or upheld something or hold up something or communicate.
No, initially that what happened was, the Georgia Department of Human Services Child Support Division came after me for unpaid child support. And what the situation was is myself and my ex-wife told she was not getting the money in a timely fashion. So we decided as adults that we were going to exclude them.
Yes,
we told them that we don't want them in our business.
So
we don't want them in our business. And they went along. Yeah, right. They went in and they suspended.
Hold on. As we go along, you know, kind of take a little break here or there so I can ask some questions, because I'm not really understanding it completely until I ask the question. So this is a state issue.
It
in family court?
It became a federal issue as well, state and federal.
Let's start off with
Department of,
did it begin in family court?
I'm sorry?
Where did the whole thing begin, in family court?
In for divorce court, I would assume, yes, divorce.
Okay, well, yeah,
divorce court. The judge made a final decision on my divorce, denying me the custody of my children. The guardian ad litem had me arrested.
Did your ex-wife pursue that kind of a thing?
Did she she showed up as the defendant in court.
But did she have
I'm not sure.
You trying to have you?
Oh, right? Yeah. She had an attorney, and I had to pay for it.
Okay. Yeah. This is the big – look, it. You know, I've talked to people who are going through divorce. Some people have already gone into it, and some people are heading into it. And I try to give them some advice. And I don't know. Look, it, if you're going to go into a court where you're going to go through a divorce, you got to work things out with your spouse prior to going in there and have everything completed so that they can't, really it goes very quickly at that point because you've already agreed to certain things and that's it. It's a contract sort of between you and your wife. You put it together, it's done, you move through the system. And you go through a little bit of a process and they don't really have much to say as long as the two agree. But once you have your conflicts, what happens then is you have, the lawyers love the conflicts because they make more money. And they will stretch those conflicts out from month to month to month to month because every time they do that, they make more and more money. And so whatever money you have, the other spouse that's looking to get support, it has to realize that this money's being taken away from both of you. It's not just you. It's her, too. But that's unfortunate. You're past that. But I did want to make that point for others who may be thinking of going into a divorce court.
We figured that out. And like two adults, we removed ourselves from the system. We let them know we no longer needed their services.
And they didn't want
After that incident happened in front of my job, we wrote a notarized affidavit and sent it to the Department of Human Services Child Support. We had a meeting with them. They interviewed both of us. I told them that they're gonna stay out of our business. And they interviewed my ex-wife, and they told her, and she said that she agrees, you know. And they sent me a letter after that. But there was a point in time where I was traveling, and I was told at the airport as I was about to go to Nassau, Bahamas, that my passport was suspended. So,
okay, so
when I contacted the, I'm sorry?
Your ex-wife understands this now, that since you can't make money, you can't work, she gets nothing.
That's what's happening now.
And they will try to incarcerate you, potentially speaking, if you don't find a way to make money. And you can't find a way to make money. And this is a problem. And this is just the... Look at the most evil courts in the world, in every state, is the family courts and the divorce system. And the probate. Yeah. The probate courts, they all suck you in and then suck every dime out of you, and you walk away totally just destroyed. And it's unfortunately you're at that point. What I would say is to really keep, do you have a log and writing down everything that's going on, and, you know, so this, you really can build up a great affidavit. And have you tried to file anything in the courts yet?
I have not filed anything in the courts yet, but I have the statement of facts. I put it in a affidavit form, you know, stating all the facts of what has transpired since 2015. Until today, you know, and again, like I said, this has gone from the family courts to now the Department of State with my passport.
Okay,
they denied me my passport,
But let's go back to the court, because only the court can be doing this damage to you, I would think. You know, let's start off. They took away your license as an engineer.
Oh, that's the tricky part. They suspended my license, but they couldn't.
Who suspended it?
Even. I'm sorry?
I don't understand. You got to give.
Department, the department, the state of Georgia suspended
okay.
my
Okay, by what authority? Was there a decision on this?
They stated that under the rules of child support, they had the right to suspend my license. But they also stated that under those same rules, they had the right to suspend. Hold on. Listen to what I'm saying. They had the right to suspend the registration on my car, which is how they pulled me over. They pulled me over on a traffic stop stating the registration on my car was suspended, which it was not.
Hold on a minute. Let's go back a little bit, because, again, I'm trying to give you information on this and try to fix the problems or the presumptions that you have. First of all, states have no rights. They have authority, they have powers, and they have eclipsed sovereignty when it comes to dealing with the federal government, okay? But they don't have rights. None of these people have rights, okay? So you they'll say rights, too, and you'll say rights. And No, you got to make that clear. You have no rights. You have powers and you have authorities, number one. Number two, to remove your ability to make a living is not in their power either. Okay, that can be done in an administrative court, because you are under a commercial situation, so an administrative court could make that decision. That has an appellate process, so you can go up to the appellate process with that decision if they made those decisions. The thing is there seems to be no due process here, and that's your key. Due process is a simple case in the federal courts to shut them all down. And to prevent everything from happening, because they removed your ability to make a living by removing your license or suspending your license without due process. They cannot do that. They think they can do a lot because they've given themselves.
They have effectively done it.
Oh yes, they get away with it because people are ignorant to the law. I said this a million times, and I'll say it again. You know, our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. Okay, and if you don't know the law, you don't really know your true heritage, and you don't really know your ability of liberty and how to defend it. So anybody who lives a life without, and I'm ignorant to this too, you know, I've learned and realized this over the years from studying this stuff by force. I had to do it myself because I was assaulted and attacked by the IRS numerous times for over 25 years. They don't have the authority to take away your living without due process. A court has got to make that decision, number one. Number two, ultimately, an administrative court doesn't even have that power to do it. Now, they take that power, and they look around, and, boy, nobody's saying anything, so we'll continue to have that power. And it just goes on and on and on. Again, it gets back to ignorance. you know, we're our own worst enemies because we don't understand and realize we need to get educated in this area so we know, A, when they're breaking the law, and B, how we can go about dealing with these people and stop them from breaking the law and have them potentially removed from government, removed from their positions maybe. You know, but again, without knowledge of these things, you can't do it. This is why, and one of the things I'm glad I heard the Trump administration talk about, Steve Miller talked about this, that you know, there's going to be a requirement from the federal level. There's already one here on New York level, but a requirement to teach civics. But it's got to go deeper than civics. It's really got to go into understanding the law. Law does not belong to lawyers. The law belongs to we, the people. That's who the law belongs to. Remember, our powers, our authorities, everything is in the law. The ability to know when they're breaking the law is in the law. The ability to know when they violate our rights is in the law. You know, you have a right to travel. They, you know, some they can't get their head wrapped around it because they've been, you know, just destroyed in their education, being taught one thing or another that just ain't true. And so this is the problem. But you have a good case, It's really a case of you can take this into the federal court, and you can, if you write your stuff very clearly on an affidavit, because that's really the facts, where your facts come in, all the damages they've done, okay, all the things that they've done to you, and what they've taken away from you without due process. No judge slapped the hammer and said, this is it. But even with that, unfortunately, the federal court judges may understand this, but they still maintain the status quo. That's problematic. But they don't have the ability to make those decisions. Okay, there's rules and regulations and different things. Now, if you're under commercial activities and you violate something in that commercial,
I'm not under any commercial activity. None whatsoever. I'm a private citizen.
Having a license.
A driver's license?
No. Your engineering license. Okay.
Having I'm an engineer that deals with computers. There's no license required.
Oh, you have a license? You don't have
it? Not in computer science.
Okay. So it's just you're working a job. But you're not an engineer with a certificate making and have a license.
No, none of that.
Well, again, that's even better for you because you don't fall under their rules. And they cannot take your living away. They cannot take your, you know, look at administrative courts, okay, do not have the power to fine or incarcerate. Think about what I just said. Administrative courts do not have the power or the authority, okay, to fine or incarcerate you. County courts, town courts, village courts, and city courts, okay, they're all administrative courts, yet they put people in jail and they fine people, okay? Even the state courts, okay, they don't have the power to ultimately do it when they're operating as an administrative court. Now, every state court is also a court of record. That's in the law, okay? Yet they ignore that, and they destroyed that with the Rules Enabling Act. So, because they've then changed everything around. It's all done covertly, and even the lawyers don't seem to understand this because the problem with lawyers is they're trained what to think, not trained how to think, okay? And they're trained in the civil law, which is, of course, the problem, ultimately. The civil law is a prison. It's a constructed prison that we're stuck in a civil law prison. So the thing, what I'm trying to say, though, is that they don't have the power or the authority, yet they have it and exercise it anyway. But I think you have a good case that you could take into federal courts and potentially win just by battling the right that they did not give you due process. You list out everything they denied from you, okay, and you got it, and you don't ever get... When you write a paper into the federal court, you don't get into the argument or the debate or the reasoning or anything concerning the case itself, okay? Because once you start to discuss the case, the federal court's not going to hear it because they don't have the ability to hear that. But if it's a lack of due process, that's the only thing you talk about. They've taken my license or my ability to work. without due process. They've taken this without due process. They've taken that without due process. You see, that's your argument. And that's a simple case in the court, you know, that you can do. But it does take a...
What I need to know is how do I go about getting that? Is it, does it have to be in the form of a lawsuit? Is it an affidavit? Because I am aware that it is a question of due process.
Yeah, again, you know, this would take time to sit down and hear and look at all the details, make notes, and try to figure things out and make a strategy and see, you know, how you place your argument. And that's where you need someone to help you with. And unfortunately, I don't know anybody that, I mean, we do, there is one person, Brent Alan Winters. And you, what state are you in again?
Who?
What state did you say you were in?
The gentleman that I had contacted, his name was...
No. What state are you living in?
Oh, I'm in Georgia, but, I mean, I don't care where I have to go.
No, I understand that, but Georgia. You can get a hold of Brent Allen Winters. You can find him at commonlawyer.com. You'll find contact information. You can tell him, you know, that I referred you to them. And he's the only guy I know that I would feel confident to refer anybody to in this, in any case, really. Now, he's a lawyer. He's not a bar attorney. He can't, you know, they refuse him the ability to argue in certain cases in some states. His state, there's no problem with his state. And because he went to a school, a law school, that was not a bar control law school. And there are a few of them out there.
Yeah, I don't care if I have to represent myself. I just want to make sure that the paperwork that I submit is not going to be contested on some sort of technicality. You know, I just want to make sure that the paperwork is proper.
Talk to Brent, and maybe he'll take your case on. He's a lawyer, so he's going to charge you if you have the money to pay him.
I don't care. I don't care if I have to, you know, pay somebody to do it. I'm willing to do it. You don't understand.
No, I'm just saying, if he can get into your case, if he can get into
I did go to commonlawyer.com, and that website doesn't exist.
Sure it does. Let me see.
Commonlawyer.com, right?
Yep.
Sorry, let me try this again.
Commonlawyer.com.
CommonLawyer.com.
Brent Alan Winters. He wrote the book on.
Okay, I see it.
He wrote the book on the excellence of the common law. This is Brent right here. He used to come in here a lot. I met him a few years back, and you know, I was gifted a book, which was the excellence of the common law, and then and that person also made a connection. I think it was the same person. No, different person made the connection. Someone said, "Hey, I know Brent," and he connected us together. And we've had a lot of communications, and him and I are potentially collaborating on writing books for educational books from K through 12, potentially. Well, we're looking for funding to do that, and if we don't get the funding, we can't do it. But he's an author, and I'm an author, and there's also some other individuals that we'd like to pull in, probably another, at least one other, maybe two. So three or four of us could work on books and which will train children everything they really need to know to understand who they are as a people, where we come from, how this nation was founded, what the true law is, the difference between equity and law, and many, many other things. And that should be part of the education, K through 12. You know?
Understood. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
You give a call, we can help you. And... you know, if it's a short thing, you know, that you can write up, and if you wrote an affidavit to lay out everything that they've done to you, how many pages do you think it would be?
Oh, it's a three-page word file.
Three pages, good. Okay. In other words, it's not.
I mean, I tried to. It could be a novel. The things that's in there, I don't think. Somebody's going to have to look at it and say, I can't believe this. I'm talking about being arrested on suspended license, sending a police officer to my house and putting a gun to my head at my door.
Okay, listen. write your three-page affidavit as best you can. It doesn't have to be an affidavit form. Basically, it's your story. If you were to give me that, and I would then create an affidavit at that, I would go through probably discussing certain things you wouldn't want to say or certain things you need to say or whatever the case may be. But go,
I could send that to you. Yeah. What email address should I send it to?
Hold on. Do that first. Then contact Brent. If Brent doesn't take your case, then I'll look at it. If it's not too long, maybe I can help you a bit. But you've got to have to get educated. And you said you're in the court course now, right? Are you in court access in the common law course? This one here.
I have taken the courses that's on your site. I've taken other courses and listen. I'm sorry.
This is a law course. Did you take the law course? We charge.
Yes.
Okay, so if you've taken that course, have you been through it completely yet, or are you still working on it?
No, not completely. I mean, I haven't been through it completely.
Continue working on that because it'll give you a lot of knowledge. It'll give you some mindsets, and you'll learn good stuff. The other thing is I wrote a book, under Welcome Page, go to Books by John Duresh. Okay, there's a book I wrote concerning the federal courts, Understanding the Federal Court System. If you click on that, what's it going for? It's $20. Okay, this is a book, Understanding How the Federal Courts Work. Okay, the process and procedure.
Is that the Government by Consent book? Because I have that book.
This is a different book. This is a book, Focus, I just recently wrote this. It's Understanding the Federal Courts. That's what it is about, okay? Understanding federal courts. Now, when you go through this book, okay, you'll get a good understanding of the basics of how the federal courts are set up and basically how it works. Of course, you still have to understand the law, and you have to understand the difference between law and equity, and you're focusing in on the law by going through the common law. And now, with that in mind, okay, one thing I didn't put into this, but it wasn't really necessary because I didn't have the knowledge at the time I wrote the book, and now I do have, and I'm getting more knowledge. I don't have complete knowledge yet, but that is bypassing the trial court, bypassing the appellate court, going directly to the United States Supreme Court. But we talked a little bit about that because they have original jurisdiction. Anything that they have original jurisdiction on, and it's a case that you want to argue, the lower courts can't argue it. They'll say, no, we can't discuss that. That's moot. It's still in argument or discussion, okay? Why you got to go to the Supreme. But you don't have to do that, so it doesn't really affect you. You know, your case is not affected by that. But that's the only thing I left out of that book because I didn't have the knowledge at the time, but very few people would really be in that situation where they have a case that's going directly to the Supreme Court and bypassing the trial process.
Understood.
Hey, so look, this is what you do. Get your paper, your three pages, written it up. When I have sort of a rule, I'll read a paper 10 times before I even think about filing it. Every time I read it, I find correction. You perfect it to the best you can. Even after you file, say, oh, I should have said it this way, or I should have used this word or that word, you know. But just go through it, massage it over and over again. You write it and set it aside, come back the next day, go through it, read it, make some changes, maybe look up some words, maybe find better words to use, or better phrases. Maybe I shouldn't say this, maybe I should say that. You know, just work on your paper, spend a week on it, okay, get it as perfected as possible, and then contact Brent, see if he'll take your case. And if he can't take your case, maybe we'll talk a little bit. You can send me a copy. I'll look at it. But I really don't have the time to take on cases. But I might be able to assist you a little bit. But I can't get too involved. Because you're looking at just an affidavit, that simplifies it for me. It's different than trying to write a whole court case. But that affidavit really, we have sort of a framework paper that you can use. That's the denial of due process, combining it with your affidavit to move it into federal court. And you'll be able to articulate your case because these are the facts that against it, that, you know, it's really all about the facts. And the facts is that they've done this, they've done that, they've done this, they've done that. And in each step of the way, you were denied due process. They did it without due process. They did it without due process. That's the key.
Understood.
Okay? All right, I got to move on, and we can talk another time.
But get a hold of Fred. Get your papers together.
Right, I'm emailing him right now.
Okay. Okay, taking our next person in the queue here. It's David B. What state you're from, David? Let me see if I can get that button going.
Georgia. That was me again. David.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to move over to the next person.
I'm in Georgia.
David? Is that you, David, talking? No.
Yeah.
Oh, no, another.
David B. is me again.
Oh, so you're in twice.
I'm on the phone and on the meeting.
Okay. All right. I'm on the
Spot Meeting app. Same person.
Okay. We'll go to Ace then. All right. We'll talk another time, babe. Okay. Ace, you got the mic. What state you're from, Ace? Ace, you got the mic. What state you're from? Last call for Ace. You got the mic. What state you in? You've been unmuted. Maybe you're muted on your side if you're talking, we're not hearing. Take a look to see if your mic's unmuted on your side. Last call for Ace. All right, take our next person. Rossini from New York, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, okay, whoops. You're not gonna
speak loud because you're coming in low.
Okay, real quick. This gentleman from Georgia, I didn't catch everything, I don't think, but if they're threatening him with jail possibly, that might be something he could look into. His county might have a public assistance, or he can do through the Bar Association. They might have 18B. But if
the problem is no lawyer is going to take his case.
But if he's threatened with...
No, it doesn't matter. He's got a case that the lawyers are not going to take his case.
Okay.
He's already tried to get lawyers, and they just didn't want to take his case. And I can see the problems with this because he's going up against the state. And lawyers don't want to go up against the state.
But if he's... Okay, so what about from the angle of family? Like, if they're making it so that he can't pay child support...
Yeah, I don't have enough information and details on his case to know... There's a lot going on with him, and
I'm doing this for him. So if he's listening,
yeah, okay.
He's not considered calling his county to see if they have like a legal aid society or something like that. That you know, maybe a public thing where they work with people who a lot of times they have to deal with, you know, petty stuff, petty in the sense of like not grand larceny and family court and that kind of thing. So that's just a suggestion there. Also, if he's looking for hiring someone to help him with paperwork, he can go on Craigslist, or there's other kinds of services where people like that are bookkeepers and paralegals and things like that, and they'll help you craft the paperwork. They won't be able to go and represent you, but if you're looking for someone to help you with the paperwork, that could be, like, I found someone, I didn't end up going with him, but I found a couple of paralegals on Craigslist. So that was the other suggestion. And also, you're making the point correctly that even if the paperwork is in order, if he doesn't understand what he has to do, because he's still going to have to end up, especially if he's representing himself, he's going to have to be in front of there and capitalize, like, you know, expand on the paperwork. So if he doesn't understand what was accomplished and what was attempted in the paperwork, he's not going to be able to really defend it. So he does need to work.
Yeah, the thing with this particular case, though, it's a due process, so it's pretty simple. It's all about the facts. The facts that they've done this, they've taken this away from me, they prevented me from doing this, they threatened me with this, and all of this was done without due process. So his legal position really is just due process, but the key thing is the facts. And so he probably could do it on his own with some assistance from somebody, you know.
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying I do understand his reticence because being in a similar situation, not exactly the same, but, you know, I felt a lot of nervousness about not using the right terminology, and he found himself using, like, complaints when it wasn't the right word and blah, blah, blah. So I get that. So anyway, just offering that to, you know, that he might want to look into, or in my area, they have something called Nextdoor, and you can put on there asking anybody if they know anybody who does anything. You know, like, do you know a carpenter? Do you know a paralegal? Do you know a dog sitter? That sort of thing. So there's services that he can throw out, you know, his inquiry and see if there's anyone. There's bookkeepers galore. You know, there's all kinds of services that offer their services. So anyway, and then, like I said, and also the county that he lives in might have some legal aid or not, you know, but those are just suggestions. But that's it. That's all I wanted to say. I'm excited about what's going on and what I just heard that RFK Jr. closed Fauci's horrific torture chamber lab where they killed like thousands of beagles. And apparently that's being closed, thank God. So we're moving. We're moving in the right direction.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thanks. Okay, anybody else wants to get into the queue? We only have one other person left in the queue. Again, if you're on a phone, star 6 and a 1. If you are on an app or browser, should be a button to get into the queue. So, okay, next person, Ross. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
Hey, John, Josh. How can I choose myself to be a principal instead of the agent of the government?
Something about an agent of the government? What's the question?
No, do become a principal in the government instead of a agent of the government? Because one reason people, when they sue, they treat you as a agent instead of a principal because they think they are. We are under the law.
I'm not sure I understand the question. Something about being a principal of the government versus something else?
Okay, agent is the person who works for the principal. You know, in the commercial law, they have two things, an agent and a person who hires the agent to do something for them.
Okay.
If the principal is the person who hires the agent. So the government treats us like we are their agent.
I'm not understanding your question. I think I'm understanding your words, but I'm not understanding the question. Something about the principal and the government being that agent, or I guess being the principal somehow. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So what's the question concerning that kind of an idea?
It's like they treat you in the as the agent instead of the principal.
Okay, so what you're saying ultimately, I'll say it in other words maybe, they treat you as an agent in opposed to treating you as one of the people. Is that pretty much what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Well, that exactly is true because they put us under civil law and therefore under civil law, which is, of course, legislative law, which is only for people who are agents of the government, you know, they work for a government agency or the agency itself or someone operating in commercial activities, those are the people that are under rules, regulations, and codes, statutes, all that stuff. But we, the people, are not under any of that. Although they put us under that, we're not under that in fact. But go ahead.
Yes, it's like the commercial officers of the company applies to the people who work in the higher echelons of the companies. That applies to.
Okay, so what you're saying again, I think, is exactly what I said, that they're trying to teach you, treat you as an agent of a company or an agent of, well, not so much a government. Well, I guess a company, too. Again, they've moved everybody under civil law. That's the Rules Enabling Act. That's what we're going up against. If we can get rid of the Rules Enabling Act and have that squashed, then we'd be back under the Rules of Common Law. The Rules of Common Law brings us back under common law, and all the courts that are out there, by constitution, by legislation, they are all courts of record. In other words, when you go into a state court, and I believe it would be most in all county courts, too. I know in New York State it's the truth also. But basically, so we'll add the county So if you go into a county court, or you go into a state court, or you go into a federal court, there are two different courts. Okay, one is an administrative court, and the other is a court of record, which is also referred to as a court of justice, which is a common law court. They close the doors to get into a court of record. No matter how hard you try, and even if you do the right words, and they try to change your words, but you keep it, you know, as much as you can, they're always taking you away. They don't have the doors of justice open because the Rules Enabling Act closed the doors of justice. They don't exist anywhere. I haven't found one. And yeah. I've found a lot of courts.
Yeah, I think, actually, they didn't physically close the doors of justice. What they did is put a paper in the way that you can't open the doors of justice.
Right, and that's what we're trying to do with our First Amendment right the First Amendment here, the right of the people to
redress the grievances.
To petition the government for redress of grievances. I don't know why I couldn't think of that, but in any event, the redress of grievances is the key. Now, I know somebody who's very good in the courts, been in the courts for, goodness, 40 years, probably at least close to 40 years, at least 30, maybe 40 years. He's held a lot of cases, won quite a few cases, especially on the state level. And of course, that's a lot of his cases that he won was the older cases, you know, over 15, 20 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago. But once he got into the federal courts, he became a problem, saying he doesn't have standing and going through all that process. He tried to take a case into the Supreme Court, I think, twice on a redress of grievances. They denied him. And again, that is a violation of due process in itself. Okay. So he had brought some cases in there, into the court, which was... It's kind of strange because the cases he brought to tried to bring to the Supreme Court, they had original jurisdiction, but he didn't know about it, I guess, at the time. And maybe I don't understand the cases completely enough to be able to make this claim, but I think the idea was ultimately he could have bypassed the trial court and the appellate court system and go straight to the Supreme Court. So he spent a lot of time in the federal courts making arguments and not getting anywhere, all the way up the line, and then even the Supreme Court rejected listening to his case.
Yeah. How did you investigate if the federal government or the state government violates
their rights? I'm sorry, say that again a little slower, because I'm not getting it. Try it again.
I say, how do I investigate if the federal government or state government violates my rights?
Okay, how do you investigate if the state government violates your rights? Is that the question?
Yes, or the federal government.
Or the federal government. Well, that's a good question, and the answer to that starts off with the Bill of Rights, okay, because those are the key rights. We also, you know, you go into the preamble to the Constitution, and that kind of sets the stage to some degree of a right. You know, our rights are the ruler that we use in order to, you know, really see what justice is ultimately. But if we look at the preamble to the Constitution, for instance, let me just open that so I just read it. The preamble to the Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, okay, this is the purpose of why, this is the power and the authority that we give to the government right here in the preamble. This is what they're supposed to be protecting. There are six points in this preamble, and of these six points, whatever they're doing, it must apply to at least one of these points, okay? So that's just the beginning of looking at your rights, ultimately. So in order to form a perfect union, okay, that's point number one. Establish justice, that's key, point number two. And they've lost justice. We don't have justice no more. That's the important point.
Insured domestic tranquility. Boy, they cause all kinds of problems. They don't do that. That's another point. Provide for the common defense. Another point. Promote for the general welfare. And here's the key. Securing the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. Excuse me. So when you go to the Bill of Rights, that's the basic, but that's not the whole entire list. We have thousands of rights. We have rights to do everything. You know, a right of privacy is clearly written in the Bill of Rights, but the right to travel isn't written in the Bill of Rights. But it is absolutely a right. We have a right to travel. And they'll say, well, you can walk. Well, in today's society, you can't get around with walking. I mean, it's like saying you can't ride your horse, you know. So how do you know your rights, ultimately, is really reading and studying, you know, the law. I'll say it again, okay. Our heritage is in the law. Our inheritance is liberty. So it's all connected. Okay, people do not understand all the rights they really have. Okay, and right of due process is clearly written in the Bill of Rights, and that's a key one, okay? But again, the right to travel, the right to practice law, you don't need a license. You see, you may need a license from the Bar Association when you go into the civil law courts. Even that doesn't sound right either, but, you know, nevertheless, a certificate of... that you have an education, for instance, that you completed something in order to really represent someone in an equity court, that might be reasonable. As a matter of fact, I think it is kind of reasonable, unless you're representing yourself. But nevertheless, they can't deny a next friend coming in because that's the law on a federal level, and you can take that into any state. So all that is debatable. But I'll tell you, you know, if you're going to represent someone in equity, you have to understand whatever it is that these people are under, okay? For instance, if you go into look at these different codes, for instance, if you wanted to represent the president, I mean, that's a big one, but let's say you wanted to, well, the president operates under USC Title III, okay? Well, you better be really schooled in USC Title III to represent the president. And of course, the president has people around him that are, you know, very schooled in that particular thing, you know, in his position as presidency. If you're going to go into bankruptcy and represent someone, well, you need to understand USC Title XI. Now, anybody can represent themselves, but to represent someone else, you have to know these things. Now, in common law is common sense. People shouldn't get too confused or too lost in common law because it is purely common sense and built upon maxims, which the truth cannot be denied. Okay? And there are thousands and thousands of maxims that have already been found and thousands to be discovered yet. Okay? So rights is something you have a right to do. They can't deny you of a right. So the more educated you are in the law, common law it is, that is, the more and more liberties you'll discover.
Yield.
I'm sorry. Was that?
Yield.
All right, yeah, we got two other people anyway. So, okay. Thanks, Ross, for talking to you. Let's move to the next person. Okay, we got a wireless caller. It's a 945 area code. What's your first name and your state? You've been unmuted.
Hi, this is Samantha. I'm in Oklahoma.
Okay, Samantha is Oklahoma.
How are you? Thank you so much for what you do.
Okay, what question or comment or correction?
So, comment, yeah, thank you. Actually, I would like to, there's still a couple of comments, but first I would like to give my approval for the man asking, I think his name was David, asking about Kenneth. I personally do work with him on my own case, my federal case that lies in the federal court in Oklahoma, the Western District of Oklahoma. It is a challenge. We've been perfecting the common law paperwork. We submitted more papers today. but it is a federal case in regards of, I filed it as a common law court of record, a trespass claim for robbery of my property, that are my boy and my girl. And I filed as a woman, one of the people. I didn't file a civil claim or a complaint. I filed a claim.
Okay, when you say you're in court for robbing your property, was it a non-judicial foreclosure? Is that what?
No, actually, my little boy and my little girl, a juvenile judge, they were taken by the Oklahoma Department of Human Services while I was traveling. We're not from Oklahoma; we're Georgia residents, and we were traveling. We were only in the state for 14 days. Based on false allegations, the CPS and the Sheriff Department actually whipped them away from me, and it's been a little over 3 years now, and they're still gone. And so I filed a federal case in July of last year in the Western District, being that it was a diverse jurisdiction. So I claimed...
Oh, this was a family court thing that did this?
It started in, it actually was a juvenile, it's called juvenile court in Oklahoma, in Canadian County. They refer to it as juvenile court, interestingly enough.
What's your position or thinking that you're going to take into the federal court?
So a common law court of record in the common law that children are our property, right? There are posterity, they belong to us, they are God-given, they're an inheritance from the Lord, as stated in the Bible. And they also the due process and also the lack of there was no warrant provided. So I listed several things in the Bill of Rights, but also the due process. There was no due process in the taking of my property as well.
Due process is actually your ability to have a court of law, a trial, and you'll go through discovery and go through all those things. Now, if it was a family court, okay, here's the interesting thing, okay, it's really pretty sickening, but take the family court. The family, I can speak of New York because I'm more familiar with New York. If you go into the Constitution, they say that the family court is a court of record. That's a lie directly from Hades because it is in conflict of the court of record. They don't do anything that is that gives you due process. So that is... One of the big problems, though, is the other courts will recognize their authority when they don't really have it. And again, that brings us right back to the Rules Enabling Act, and that's why we're going into the federal courts to fight this Rules Enabling Act.
Yes, thank you. And I wanted to just let you know I took some notes from the writ mandamus and entered them into my paperwork, a screenshot of them, and entered them as images and gave credit to the National Liberty Alliance in my federal court papers, so I'm happy to send that to you for you to see.
Have you tried a habeas corpus?
I did try habeas corpus, actually, yes, in the state of Georgia, in the original jurisdiction.
You could take it into the federal court, habeas corpus into the federal court. Mm-hmm. They have the authority to hear that because that is within their jurisdiction. Habeas corpus is in the Constitution, okay? And if they've taken your property, which is your children, your right there, your property, so to speak, anyway, at least God gave them to you until a certain age. And that could be different for different children, I'd imagine, too. But in any event, they did take your property without due process. And if you take that into the habeas corpus, do a habeas corpus in the federal court, at least that could be heard. And you potentially can get your children back. What are they claiming against you?
There was originally they said that I was going to kill my children. Actually, the main accusation that was going to kill my children because I knew that the CPS was on their way, which actually did not wind up in the final paperwork.
They claimed that you were going to kill your children.
That was yes, and that was an accusation, but not actually in the final paperwork though. It was
liberal accusations. Look at. They take you into court for one thing and try you for another. That happens all the time. You know, when a grand jury will go and you'll do an indictment on an individual for a certain thing, and they look for that indictment, then they put in whatever they need to get in that indictment. But they also have these evil intentions. They're adding other things. And when they get moving into the court, all of a sudden they start to add these other things to the case, which is unlawful without going back to the grand jury to asking them. But they do it anyway because they do.
Right.
What? Why do you think they're getting away from this, getting away with this? The reason they're getting away with this is because we, the people, are totally ignorant to all of this. We don't know the law. And if you don't know the law, you don't know what your rights are, because you've got so many rights. You don't have the right mindset, the attitude, and you can't defend yourself. And that's why you go get a lawyer who will never defend you on your rights anyway.
Yes, correct. I could not find a single attorney to, you know, to take the case, and you know, without $100,000 price tag that was quoted to me at one point, and so obviously that was not possible.
Okay, so let's go back. I got a couple of questions for you. They took your children because they said you were going to kill them. What made them think that you were a danger to your own children?
I don't know.
And then they didn't uphold that, and they went. What did they then charge you with later?
Many of other things. But I was never charged with anything until actually I tried to attempt to retrieve them on my own from the abusive foster home they were in. But there were many other allegations actually on the paperwork that didn't match. The final paperwork doesn't match the original allegations, but there are a lot of different things, you know, many different things, stating my home wasn't safe, which they'd never been to my home because their home is in Georgia, not in Oklahoma. So the public accusations are different from the accusations on the paperwork, as you're saying. So I'm not sure where they get their information from.
Remember one thing. You want to bring up the points of what they're doing and the damage they're doing to you, and the denying, you know, your abuse, being abusive to you concerning your rights, and you have to make the point this is all about due process. You don't want to get into the details of the case because they will not. You know, a lot of people make this mistake. Lawyers make this mistake, okay? That they'll go into a court case and they put all this stuff concerning the case. And then maybe they put a cause, you know, because you can only move it to federal court for cause, and generally for most of the cases it's due process, but let's say they do due process. But once they get all the facts of the case and all these things, they won't hear it. They just kick it out, and they're not going to tell you why they kicked it out. They're just going to say, we're not going to hear your case, okay? You know, when a person goes into a court, a federal court, because you're not a lawyer, you would imagine that they should at least tell you why they're not going to hear the case, so you can go back and fix that and come back in properly. But they're not interested in your case anyway. These people, I don't know, well, they went to the devil school, in my opinion, because you go to a bar school, they're creating devils, in my opinion, because all they're interested in is money, to win, win, win. Doesn't matter, don't care. No, I can't tell you. I got a case going right now, pursuing the other side, which is the Attorney General, okay, coming in and just putting all these lies concerning the case, and I wrote a paper and listed out every single lie, and looking for that this lawyer needs to be sanctioned. I just got a response from that, and he's kind of doubling back on it and saying he didn't lie, blah blah. But it's clear as a bell. Okay, he said the words, I showed the facts, and with all the documentation, and he just made things up. These lawyers do this all the time. It's constant with these people. But in any event, and a lot of times when you're going up against the state, I've been in the federal courts where the state had to come into the federal court, and, you know, they're lawyers now, and they're people that work for the state, okay? They're working, you know, they're... the attorney generals, you know, the people underneath, and they don't have a clue on how the federal courts work, and I was in a court in a case where the judge actually chastised them numerous times, okay, didn't chastise me. I was ignorant too to a lot of things, but I'm just one of the people. I was a person, so, and I did win that particular case, you know, in that federal court, but and that was a personal case. But the thing is, you got to be careful in the court. But they're probably going to be ignorant how the federal court and the rules go. And if they don't do their homework, you know, that's good too for you anyway.
Mm-hmm. So with the habeas corpus, so I would write one for each child, each my boy and my girl, right? Not a collective one. It would be one for each of them.
Good question. I never thought about that. I would off the bat think collectively because you're a family unit. I don't know that I would do it independently. And you don't want two different hearings. You want one. They are connected. I would think, I think you could do it either way. Personally, I would do them collective, all together, one heavy for both my children or whatever.
Okay. So what do you, so my thinking is this. I've requested hearing within 72 hours, and I'm not sure that that'll happen. I've been requesting a hearing since February 3rd and have been ignored, of course. I finally told the judge I was going to enjoin.
That's in the state court, right?
The federal court.
It's in the federal
court. The Western District of Oklahoma, yes.
Okay, yeah, that's a problem because, look, the law is clear as a bell, okay? You got to go look up the law in the federal level. And the law requires that a habeas corpus be heard in 3 days, period, end of subject, nothing to talk about. They can, the other side can ask for, if they have a good cause to ask for it, and they have to show what that cause is, for more time. Unfortunately, more times than not, the judge will give them the more time. The maximum is 20 days. So that right there is a violation of the law to begin with. Something is wrong there. And again, you know, look at, I went down in a case, and I wanted to go talk with the judge. Now, I've talked with the judge in the past. You know, you go down and talk about a situation or whatever's going on in a case without getting into the details that you're discussing anything that the other side shouldn't be there for. But it's usually procedural, okay? And that's a situation you go in and talk to the judge. Hey, you know, I filed this habeas corpus. The law, you go get the law. Make sure you have the law with you. The law requires to be heard in 3 days, maximum 20 days. But, you know, that's only given a, you know, some more time if the other side needs it and has good cause and reason to have need that time. And the maximum would be 20 days. How come I'm not being heard? So go down and find the judge and see what you could do. Here's a problem. Here's a problem that just came about in New York. I don't think it's on a federal level, and I don't know if it's any states. I went up recently to talk to a judge about a case that I won by default, okay? And they wouldn't let me speak to the judge, okay? But you can at least, bare minimum, if they won't let you speak to the judge, you can speak to the judge's clerk and request that the clerk bring this information to the judge and give you an answer, okay? So if that happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I would go to see why this habeas, is it a good habeas corpus? Did you write a good one?
Well, what happened is, so I'll just back up a little bit. I filed the habeas corpus in 2022 in the Georgia court, and in the original court where the children and the father and I have a custody agreement with the children, and that judge dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, even though she has original jurisdiction over us as a family in that court. So I would now need to create federal.
Are you separated from your husband?
We were not married legally. We just had a custody agreement.
Okay. Well, the thing is that it's the children's father.
Yes, absolutely. Both.
And then the children's father was with you or not with you at the time?
Not with me.
Okay. So there again, they're denying the father to take the children?
They did that, yes. They also denied him as well.
This shows you how evil this whole system is, how screwed up it is, and how every federal judge in this nation needs to go. They have destroyed so many people's lives. It's incalculable, the damages that they've done, the lives they destroyed, and people who've died or committed suicide, you know, or just died early because of stress and everything from these evil SOBs, you know. I mean, and the worst case, as I mentioned, the worst courts in this world is the family court and the probate court, I'll tell you, and the family court, which includes the, you know, the divorce court. It's just nothing but pure evil is all it is. That's what I see when I walk into those courts and I listen to these people speak. But I also hear this in the federal courts, too. They're just so lawless. It's pathetic. It's horrible. It's horrific. You know. Anyway, I got to move on. We've got two other people. I'm just going to spend a minute or two because we're over time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Let me go. We've got to make this quick. Francine, you got the mic, and then we got David in just a minute or so. Let me open David up, too, at the same time, because are you going to talk about David?
No.
No? Okay, go ahead.
All right. Very, very quickly, you mentioned earlier that there were some states that were allowing, this is how I understood it, when you were talking to him about lawyers and how some people are not necessarily lawyers, but you know, but some states allow non-lawyers to go and represent you and others don't.
No. Well, here you can make the battle. It's an uphill battle. I've won it on a couple occasions. You know, I didn't know earlier on, but in any event, and that is as an ex-friend. You can go in as an ex-friend. It's a federal law. It's written in. So as an ex-friend, if you're competent, you can go in and represent someone else. If you're incompetent, they may not allow that, and they may have a case against you for that. But the other thing is if you're competent or incompetent, you have a right to go in and represent yourself in any event, no matter what they think. Okay? So, that's a good question. The bottom line is do they know what they're talking about? I mean, I listen to a lot of people talk about law, and they haven't got a clue on law. And then they talk about all this stuff, how they go into the courts, and they write these papers and do that. We've had some conversations, I believe, you and me, about this a little bit, to some degree anyway. And they got it all wrong. They're going in the wrong position. They're making the wrong arguments. They're not sticking on the facts and the law. And the facts and the law that I stick on, of course, is always the common law. But I'll use codes and statutes and anything else I can use against them because they are controlled by statutes. So I'll use statutes to control them. But they don't have the right or the ability to have statutes and use them against me because I don't work for the government agencies, and I'm not doing commercial activities.
Yeah, but the difficulty that I, Dave, and many others have is that even though we can talk till we're blue in the face, that but you know we're the ones being dragged out.
Right. That's the problem. Because why? Because they're evil. I say that a lot, and I really mean what I'm saying. And you know, I don't call people evil, but I'll tell you what, it comes to these judges and stuff, I don't see nothing but evil coming out of these people. They have no respect for the people. They have no respect for the Constitution. They don't care about your Bill of Rights. They injure people all day long, and they think nothing of it. They go home and go to sleep. That's evil to me.
Yes, it is, and it makes it very difficult to, you know, for all that we're talking about, to try to actually win at something, because they don't really play by the rules.
No, they don't even obey their own rules, and they'll use their rules and they'll use their law to do whatever they can, and when you use it against them, they will just ignore it and they'll break their own rules. They do this all day long. It's the most corrupt system here in the United States, in my opinion. But look what they're doing to Trump. I mean, there's 600 judges out there that have it in for Trump.
For aiding and abetting these illegals, right? So the one down
right. There. Well, look at the fact that they're sticking their nose into his business. They don't have a right. And I think Trump knows this. He can tell them to go to Hades and just do what he wants to do anyway. But he's playing it out for the people. He wants the people to see.
He's exposing them, and I love that. Now, that leads me to my other question. Someone told me a few days ago that when her now husband was being divorced from the previous, and it was lingering. It was there about 3 years, and at first she thought, but then she corrected it. She found out and told the person to tell me that she thought it was like a 3-year limit. That after 3 years, the Supreme Court in Orange County have to switch out, and they're not allowed to be on a case longer than 3 years. And then she corrected and said that's not the truth, but it was, I guess she decided, that judge decided that since it was going nowhere after 3 years, that normally this was to take a year for a divorce, that she voluntarily stepped aside. Now, I did a quick search on Google, and there is no law that says it has to be a year, but I only did one search, and it could be that it's a more understood thing rather than a law. But I just wanted to ask you your opinion about that.
I don't know the answer on that one, so... Okay. All right, we'll take our last caller. Going back to David again. Before you talk, David, we only got a minute or two because we really got to close down. Terry, are you by your mic? Can you hear me, Terry? Well, maybe while we're waiting for Terry. Go ahead, David.
You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Yep.
Yeah, so I was, listening in the background at all the comments and what you had spoken about to me about. I was more interested in the due process defense or the due process line of defense for what has been done to me by the state and federal government. So, you know, I've been looking online at some of the things that they have, but I don't see anything that leads me direct. Even though I know that my due process was violated because, you know, they basically try to sentence me without even accusing me of anything, or they fine me and jail me.
Due process is a trial in a court of law. That's a due process. You got a jury, and decisions are made. But you have a trial. There's a process. There's due process going through the trial and discovery and different things. And basically, you then have your trial in front of a jury, and the jury comes up with a decision. That's due process of law.
Right. And I guess I'm trying to put together a strategy, a legal strategy, as to how to approach this. So.
Yeah, but I mean, there was no jury involved, was there?
Was there a jury involved?
Yeah, in your case.
These people have taken me to court so many times. When I went to divorce court, there was no jury involved.
That's why it's not a court of record. So that begins right there. But any other court that you went into on this thing?
The traffic ticket.
Okay, there's no jury there.
I demanded a trial by jury. Here's the funny thing.
They're not even capable
of it. They're not, because here's what I found out. They rigged the jury.
Yeah, there's only six of them to begin with, usually, and that's not even a jury. You got to have 12.
I identified the individual that was working for them.
Yeah, besides that, it was probably done in, what was it done? It was done in a town court, a village court, or sometimes they do it in a county court.
No. Well, they gave me probation and fines. They gave me about $3,000 in fines.
What court? Was it a town court, village court, state court? What court?
Oh, it was a state court.
A state court did a traffic violation court?
Criminal charge, traffic violation.
Okay, criminal charge. What made it criminal?
Nothing made it criminal.
Yeah, but what are they claiming to make it criminal? What was the actual charges? I mean,
I asked. They said it. Listen, this is something straight out the Twilight Zone. All right, I went through a criminal trial for a traffic violation.
Yeah, that's absurd. I know, and you know I know that some of these clowns will put you in jail even on a traffic violation. That's how bad it is. But they don't have the power or the authority. The problem is the sheriff doesn't even know that they can't even send him to his jail, and he needs to reject them because due process cannot be gotten in a town. Well, you went to a state court, but it's a traffic. It's a different jurisdiction. It's a commercial jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with you. Did you make that point?
Not only that, but I appealed the case, and they basically tried to tell me that I didn't have a stance because the 30 days to appeal had passed, and they continue to contact me and asking me to close out the appeal, and I keep refusing. I'd like to know, what is your take on that?
Well, I would open a new case and sue them all for a large amount of money.
The appeal case, or because the only way you could do it is to appeal.
I'd sue the judge. I'd sue the I don't know that I'd sue the court. I might sue the court, but I'd sue the judge. I'd sue the prosecutor. As a matter of fact, I just got a case that defaulted. I sued the judge and the prosecutor.
I have all that written.
Huh?
I said I have all that written in the timeline. It is, when I read it, it is. You couldn't make up a fictional story this crazy.
All right, well, look, if we want to talk some more, why don't we do it next Monday, because we're way, way over time.
No problem.
Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Well, before we close down, Terry, can you hear me? Call in, Terry. If you're talking, your mic is muted. Terry. I guess Terry's away from the computer. All right. Anyway, we're going to close down now. Thanks, everyone, for coming. And Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. Good night. Let me shut off the recording here.